Hello, everyone, and welcome to JFG Tonight. One of my biggest fans, Ariana Grande, is in the regular chat. She says, hey, I love that live. That looks like a butt. It looks like butt season is back on the internet as people get ready for the election. And oh my God, this Roaring Kitty guy, what a disappointment. What a fucking comedian. You have to wonder if he's Jewish because he shows up today at the most expected live stream in the economic sector, perhaps in history. I mean, it's that serious now because the GameStop craze determines the sentiment of the market and determines, oh, Ariana Grande wants a reaction to her new album. Good. Not perfect. Okay. Okay for what you've been doing. I don't know. I haven't listened to your album, Ariana. Sorry. Yeah, Roaring Kitty comes up with ridiculous explanations as to why people should be into GameStop. Now, of course, he labels everything with this is not investment advice or whatever, but there he is making basically the social welfare case for GameStop, where he's like, and it's always been like this, the GameStop arguments, I've always found them ridiculous. Of course, their ridiculousness kind of makes the mimetics of it. I think that people are like, because 2 years ago when they started this, it was, they were saying, oh, we're just giving a chance. We're giving a chance to a new, to a company that has shown that it had some talent at what it was doing, so we're giving them a second chance. Of course, no one believed that suddenly physical media games stores would be a thing anymore. No one believed in the physical business, but it was kind of so laughable. It was so laughable to see people on the internet say, hey, let us give a chance to GameStop, that it cut. It cut into a meme frenzy and into GameStop rising massively in price. Now the argument that Roaring Kitty comes with, and I think the markets have shown two things today. That one, the setup was already there to drain the energy of any future GameStop meme. You know, Roaring Kitty today says, you know, Ryan Cohen. I'm betting on Ryan Cohen. But what a coincidence. There's a guy named Ryan Cohen who's CEO of GameStop. And Roaring Kitty, you know, has to have a reason to do his mimetic moves. And so he says, I'm betting on Ryan Cohen. He's going to turn this around. Think about it. He's getting lots of money right now. All this money flow will get to him. And he's going to make the right decisions. I'm making the bet that in the next 3 years, he's going to turn around the business of GameStop, and that GameStop can become something else than what it is, and that we can even defocus the idea that it's a gaming store. Now, okay. That's an objective argument that can be measured by the... Does it make sense? Does it make sense at all to send your money to Ryan Cohen? It's this model, the idea that Ryan Cohen is going to have some amazing idea. We still don't know what it is. Roaring Kitty doesn't know what it is. It's like the 20-year plan of Sargon. I can't tell you about it, but it's going to work and we're going to fix Western civilization. Look, the best thing that Ryan Cohen could do, and this is what CNBC, for once, the CNBC analysts are more accurate than the live streams. The CNBC analyst was saying, wait a minute, they have 2 billion cash, 2 or 3 billion cash. They have 15 billion worth of market cap value. So when I put my money into GameStop, whatever they do that's so brilliant that Roaring Kitty wants to do, that's a 15-to-2 ratio of loss. Basically, I'm diluting my money into 15 billion to get the result of whatever Ryan Cohen can do with 2 million. And this is where, if you're going to do this, why not take Michael Saylor instead of Ryan Cohen? Michael Saylor has demonstrated that he has a plan. He's buying Bitcoin with his money at MicroStrategy. So if you want to be diluting your wealth into a stock apparatus, Michael Saylor has already invented the most efficient machine. And you're not going to get 15 to 2 with Michael Saylor. You might get 15 to 11, 15 to 14, maybe at some point 15 to 16, depending on when you get in, when you get out. But with GameStop, you have Roaring Kitty says saying Ryan Cohen will have some amazing idea what to do with this money. But the best thing he could do with this money would be to put it in Bitcoin. And even then, he would be at an order of magnitude less efficient than Michael Saylor. Therefore, the thesis that GameStop can be anything, can have any sort of function. I mean, 2 years ago, the joke was that GameStop will become the store of value of Western civilization. Now, that was fucking hilarious. And to a certain extent, it could have been true. But what we've seen recently is GameStop has set up basically to drain, to parasitize this mimetic rise that they didn't ask for. They have positioned themselves to emit new shares. So they've positioned themselves just like Michael Saylor. They've positioned themselves so that if there is a new mimetic rise, they are willing, at will, they can multiply their shares. And that's what they've been announcing. They will be multiplying their shares and therefore draining a lot of this market wind. So basically, at this point, Roaring Kitty is nothing else than a pawn of a parasitized market system that is miscounseling people. You know, GameStop, I'm betting on GameStop because of this, because of that, and ultimately sending people to the slaughterhouse operated by Ryan Cohen, the man who took control of GameStop and who made it into not a machine like Michael Saylor to enrich people in terms of accumulating Bitcoin, but a machine for self-enrichment. And it's a machine that gives you no promise. At least Michael Saylor tells you whatever you get at the end when you own MicroStrategy, it's going to be whatever amount of Bitcoin we've succeeded at catching on the market below the average price. But with Ryan Cohen, you could waste your money into a deal like Red Lobster, start renting the properties of GameStop to his friends, and poof, your money would disappear. When I say trillions vanish in the title, it's kind of a joke on whenever there's a big market event, you know, you have these titles, trillions vanish. But there probably was trillions vanish today because all the markets were down. And it feels for the first time that there is a market-wide event affecting crypto, stock markets, GameStop, gold, everything. And it seems that it's the disappointment with respect to Roaring Kitty. His live stream was just not encouraging enough. And it's like the day of the beaver or whatever. what is this little animal that you guys are tracking to determine if the spring is coming or extending? It's like this. People are we're just waiting for Roaring Kitty to show up. And what shows up is a man who doesn't deserve any form of leadership. And yet there were 600,000 human beings connected to the groundhog, the day of the groundhog. Well, today was the day of the Roaring Kitty. 600,000 human beings were watching directly on stream, probably millions if you count the clips and the people following on social media. 600,000 people were listening to a guy who can make a couple of jokes with band-aids and a false broken arm. Okay. But who's then completely at a loss when giving giving a higher purpose to his whole quest. Because at least 2 years ago, the mimetics around GameStop were that, okay, we will challenge the system. We will have those hedge funds who are engaged in shorts against GameStop. We will punish them for their shorts. And yes, the system is built with a spring such that if you have a lot of leveraged shorts, the price can go very high, crazy high, and you can have runaway systems that build in the market. But Roaring Kitty promoted none of this. So we don't even have a greater vision of, oh, I'm doing it for contesting against capitalism, or I'm doing whatever, you know, give it a flavor to your movement. No, we have a guy that was just drinking a beer. And that was playing with an 8-ball and saying, oh, do we ask questions to the 8-ball? I don't know. So it's very disappointing for a guy who was off of the internet for 2 or 3 years, whatever amount of time it was. Everyone is disappointed, so the markets are very down. And GameStop itself has continued. It was going down during his live stream and going further down as he was closing it. John Drake says, punish them by abandoning the current system for something better. Yeah, I mean, in a way, today, Bitcoin emerges as a much better option to exit the system than GameStop. And you realize that GameStop, it's like a bunch of sharks that have already aligned. So that if you try to repeat the GameStop mimetics, first, there's the question of, can you make the same joke twice in human society? I don't think you can. I think that it was very cheap when I saw Andrew Tate coming back with the jokes of 2 years ago and say, oh yeah, I want to put it to the rich hedge funds. Here, take this. I'm putting $1 million in GameStop. We've heard that before. The hedge funds haven't, you know, some of them have bankrupted, but, you know, the system hasn't suffered a big hit at following the events of GameStop. So it was kind of cheap to have the reawakening of already existing memes and nothing else. So it's a campaign that falls very much short of breath when you compare it to the first campaign that was spontaneous, that was getting people involved. And perhaps one of the most disgusting things in this is Roaring Kitty. He displayed his internal account at JP Morgan or something like this. And he's still in the positive. You know, you have lots of people are getting scammed into this. They buy at the peak. They lose half of their wealth. Roaring Kitty is still up 50 to 75%, I think, from based on what I've seen. So this guy is surfing between being a billionaire or getting $250 million with his beer, while people are losing money for real and people are joining a mimetic campaign that has probably all insurances that the sharks are already aligned to exploit it. And you have the shark at the top, Ryan Cohen at GameStop. He's willing to emit new shares until GameStops get richer and richer from this wave of false interest. Stephen Robinson says he started with 50,000. I don't know that that's true. 50,000 on this run, because at least the recorded initial value that he has in JP Morgan was something like 2 or 3 million, and I don't know. I didn't know exactly what we were seeing on the screen, but I'd be very surprised if he started with 50,000. Okay, from the beginning, so 2 years ago, he had 50,000. That I would believe. All right, so this girl is ready to find a husband. Let's see what sacrifices she's willing to do.
I will meow for you. I would bark for you. I would oink for you. I would bleat for you. I would honk for you. I would glub glub for you. I would caw caw for you. I would roar for you.
Okay, but can you stop identifying as animals for me? Because that's the question ultimately. By the way, talking about the dating scene, we have received a message. A man is looking for a woman. I will give you a quick description. If you are a woman looking for a male husband in the US, send me an email, jeanfrancois.garyep@gmail.com. You can find my email at the website jfg.world. The links are in the description below, or you can send me a DM. So here is the description of the guy, and I won't publish his photo or give personal details, but he is a man with an impressive mustache. He's a good-looking man, 6 foot, 190 pounds, a good-looking kind of root American male, very, very, he gives me the impression of being like in Gangs of New York, you know, Bill the Butcher type of like original American aesthetics. He's interested at starting a family in the Ozarks region. So he's a based man in the Ozarks region in the US. And yeah, he has a very impressive mustache. Let me tell you, this mustache is the kind of mustache I would put on a logo of a hipster burger place in some hipster town. Very, very upscale mustache. It just goes like, oh my God. I will not give details that could allow locating him or anything, but yeah, he's 36, musician, an artist, a craftsman, Int J. He is raised Catholic, but has been seeking on the Christ question for a decade. He is looking for a woman who's into crafts, adornments, building homes, building family, music. Any of these interests is good. So if you want to reproduce with that male, pair with him and bond, send me an email. I will give you his contact. We also have an Australian male looking for a... is it an Australian man? We have a Canadian man. So if you're in Canada, if you're in the US, or if you're in Australia, I have 3 men available right now of quality to date you. Do it, ladies, says new guy. Venture capitalist David Sachs goes all in on Trump. A new wave of enthusiasm is emerging for former President Trump among VCs and business leaders across America. While some or much of this may be simply reading tea leaves and staying nimble, it's worth noting that many former Democrat defenders are now on Team Trump. I believe that there is definitely a switch. There is a switch. Trump is getting normalized within the left. He's being presented as a solution to people who are perhaps within, in line with Jewish power, in line with being against far leftism. The center is being courted right now. And what it means, unfortunately, is that Trump is getting bought right now. I mean, this David Sachs is the guy who hosts the Twitter spaces of Elon Musk sometimes. I'm afraid that him taking over some funding for Trump will mean that Trump will be further and further attached toward a very centrist vision, if not leftist vision. And so we won't have a Republican president. I'm sorry, guys. We can't even have a Republican president because what we have is 2 Democrat presidents at this point. I've always been critical of this with Trump, is that being this New York businessman that he is, he's always been an emotional bear, you know, a emotionally sensitive guy, and ultimately a leftist liberal. And thankfully, he somehow pursued a not too leftist program for his first presidency. But when you see the kind of people that he's successfully surrounding himself with, that is definitely bad news for anyone who would like to see a right-wing program in the U.S. We have some conflicts at McGill University, pro-Palestinian people against other, maybe the police. Okay, so there is agitation across the nations, Canada and the U.S., with respect to people who are on the left and support very strongly Palestine. Andino reports a mistrial in the Charlottesville case after a jury couldn't reach a verdict to convict a Unite the Right attendee for carrying a tiki torch at the 2017 rally. So this guy, all he had done is carry a tiki torch. Now, that's free speech as if I've ever seen it. And so it's so ridiculous that he even had to go through the whole process of trial, because it's made to harass people. It's made to intimidate people. I think everyone would agree that it falls under the First Amendment, but they still get you through the process to get you tired. That is so sad. But thankfully, there was some sensical, maybe one individual on this leftist Virginia jury in Charlottesville, one individual may have saved them by saying, no, I can't find them guilty. But now we find ourselves with a mistrial. And the crazy thing is they could restart doing it. They could just restart the trial now, because a mistrial generally doesn't come with an obligation to stop. You can actually redo the trial. Rudy Lacid says, the crazy thing is most of the talking points from Unite the Right now are mainstream. Deport them all is something Trump says at his rally. Yeah, there is some victory. There is a cultural victory in parallel to a political defeat. It's very weird to be taking this in. But there is definitely a cultural victory. I mean, we have Elon Musk, you know, by any standard, a Democrat, someone who he said that he would support Trump this time, but as far as I know, he's been mostly a Democrat for most of his life. So here we have an Elon Musk, you know, sharing talking points about race that used to be things we had to fight for to get them talked about. We have the free speech coming back to X. So we have a normalization of a lot of talking points, including the criticism of disbalanced Jewish power. And so at this point, the cultural victory is almost as good as you could imagine it. But at the same time, there is a political loss. Actually, as people got more opened to these extreme talking points, the political class is cementing a victory against those talking points. And you have no sign that Trump will do anything like his first presidency, anything close to it. You have no sign that he's going to be a right-wing president at all. Roaring Kitty shares his current positions, currently totaling $350 million. So look, he's up 50%, 135% on this position. Now, he did lose a lot if you compared as if he had exited yesterday. But somehow, Roaring Kitty, you know, is this just ridiculous guy, very unintelligent guy. And, you know, he could have exited yesterday and be close to a billionaire. But he's so greedy that he kept in. Of course, future will tell if he does become a billionaire. But now he has $350 million. He's at 84% from his entry moment. So that's the sad thing with all this, is that if you look at the price chart of GameStop, there is a lot of people who within a day have lost half of their money. It moved from $62 to $28. So you have people who got in really at the wrong time and who will be punished. Meanwhile, Roaring Kitty is sitting because he's this insider, basically, because he probably knew that there was the Andrew Tate payment that was coming for some reason. Someone paid Andrew Tate to make this publicity around GameStop. So he knew to position himself at the beginning such that even if there are people who are losing right now, he's still in the green. And that is very sad. That is insider trading, just the definition of it. The question is, can the authorities trace back the purchase of Andrew Tate through a non-anonymous or a quasi-anonymous network? Basically, can they make a link between money that inflowed toward the Tates and Roaring Kitty? If they can, I think there's going to be a case of insider trading. If they can't, he's going to run free. That's as simple as this. And if you are in GameStop right now, you are insane. I know that there are some people on the Discord and people that I highly trust who got into a little small position of GameStop for the lulz. Even for the lulz, I don't understand why you would do this. Do you really want to live with the stress? Like, whatever, even if you have $5 in GameStop, the stress that it would cause me would lead me to... would lead me to lose much more than $5 in terms of enjoyment of my life. And so I don't get into GameStop, neither before, neither after these mimetic rise, because right now it's kind of random. It could go up to $200 right now, or it could go down to $5. No one knows. This guy is totally astonished as the CNBC economic analyst, and they're playing the live stream of Roaring Kitty on CNBC. And look at the answer of this guy. He's like, no, this is nonsense. The Roaring Kitty arguments are nonsense. And it's priceless to see his face as he hears the host repeat the Roaring Kitty arguments.
Gil here is, you know, naive or blind to the challenges that exist at GameStop. And he says as much.
You're telling me that this guy with sunglasses and a fake armband is naive and blind. He's throwing his money and people's money into a 15-to-1 ratio, as this economist will point out.
Much. What's the plan? That's a fair question. He says, the legacy business is cutting costs and stabilizing, but it's about the future. Can they raise more money?
Here you have a CNBC host repeating a trollish talking point. They are cutting costs of the physical business. The physical business is unviable. It depended on a generation of teenagers being given money by boomers to go buy physical PlayStation games and to trade in their used PlayStation and Nintendo 64 games. Cutting cost is a euphemism here. We need to abolish this business. It's not viable. You're not even going to make the salary of your cashier guy in a day of sales. It's a dead business. And yet you have CNBC analysts saying, so what Roaring Kitty is saying is that there were significant cutting of cost. It's all trolling. And this is where you have to grant it to Roaring Kitty. He's successfully trolling the system. He got a CNBC analyst to repeat his trolling to a serious economist.
He asks, I don't think 3 years is too long to wait for a turnaround. He talks about how unusual it is that retail traders are the ones leading a stock, right? Usually it's the professionals. It's the institutions. We all know that. We talk about them every day. People like you are the ones who are normally driving stock action. But now it's a cohort, once again, of retail investors. Can you just comment on the comments that he has made over the last few minutes?
Well, thank God you and Dominic both did a job describing what we've seen. because I wouldn't have the words. It's an insult to your viewers' ears. It's an insult to the market. I actually expected something more from him. So whatever my bar was of expectations, it was lower than the bar, and I wouldn't have had those professional words to describe it. This is a one-off stock. This is not representative of the market. Hopefully in a few days from now, we can start talking about NVIDIA again, or whatever other stocks actually mean something. This, let's just end today, and from what we've seen so far, there's no words.
This guy is so pissed. There's no words that I can find that are valid on CNBC. While Roaring Kitty is there yapping about, oh, well, you know, the business will turn around. The physical cost have been reducing.
I mean, aren't some of the points, though, that he makes, I don't know how deep...
The host is making the devil's advocate for Roaring Kitty.
People were expecting that his research on the name would be...
The research of Roaring Kitty has concluded that there's a guy named Ryan Cohen at GameStop. And you know, I kind of trust that guy. It's my feeling. I'm following my feeling. I think Ryan Cohen will turn this around. I mean, this is absolute trolling of the internet getting on the airwaves. I love it. But at the same time, it's fooling a lot of people.
Here's what we have at the end. Here's what you're talking about. The company's going to have $3 billion in cash, right? And it's going to be a war that he's forgotten about.
So he's mentioning, so there will be a new offering of shares. So we're diluting the shares of people. Now, that will bring $3 billion in cash.
The legacy business and the $3 billion cash with a market cap of maybe $15 billion.
So you have a $15 billion market cap. You're diluting your money into $15 billion worth of shares for $3 billion of cash that you have no idea where it's headed. Maybe it's headed for Bitcoin. That would be the best case scenario, but you're kind of late in Bitcoin also.
And it's going to be a war chest for Ryan Cohen to go out and do private equity or...
A war chest for Ryan Cohen. Look at his face. A war chest for Ryan Cohen, and we give you, you're going with this $3 billion Ryan Cohen with the wings of an angel. You can do whatever you like with it. It doesn't make sense. Ryan Cohen would have to find in 2024, right now, a way to multiply this $3 billion to $15 billion for it to be a rational decision. You would have to find a mimetic cryptocurrency or something that does a 6x value to be sensical as an investment. It's absolutely ridiculous. It makes zero sense.
Investing, and so I'm paying a 5x multiple.
And yeah, you are paying a punishment. Because you could buy that crypto. If you think that Ryan Cohen is a great crypto buyer, a fine purchaser of Bitcoin, you can do at much less of a loss, you can buy the Bitcoin yourself. That's where it doesn't work economically. That's where the business model of Michael Saylor actually works to undermine this kind of useless movement of money that GameStop is trying to generate. Shamrock Shake says, just lucky boomers that they think they got rich because of their superior business savviness. Oh, yeah. I mean, when you consider that this guy right here with the headband is worth $350 million, you do realize that meritocracy is dead. There is nothing left, and the system is headed toward rewarding random people. And that's a bad sign for a civilization. Roaring Kitty ends bizarre live stream as GameStop crashes. To sum up the bizarre broadcast, Roaring Kitty is betting on GameStop CEO Ryan Cohen's turnaround with options that expire in 2 weeks. Actually agree with Russ Gerber for once. Russ Gerber was saying GameStop now plunging 40% today. At some point, people will realize they are getting worked over by GameStop/Ryan Cohen. This pump has allowed GME to dump 120 million shares on the public. No question, they wouldn't have been able to do this without the kitty. And that's where it gets very dirty. What's happening here is either criminal, or if you want to invoke that, oh, he didn't know and they didn't know and maybe they're not in cahoot, at the very least, it is the coordination of a very dishonest system of drainage of economic energy. And, you know, I'm starting to be interested in this case, in this mysterious Ryan Cohen. What? How is it that a Jewish man with a Cohen name found himself at the top of a Ponzi scheme, basically, once again? How does that happen? What is the history here? Was Brian Cohen just a young gamer playing Nintendo 64 all his life and made his way into GameStop by just trading used cartridges with the highest margins? Is that the backstory of Ryan Cohen? The guy who became a multimillionaire by you know, I can only give you $2 for this Mario Kart 64 cartridge. Sorry. That business has been going bad, bro. $2 right now on the table. Your cartridge. Here, I'll give you a deal. I'll take your Super Mario World and Super Mario Kart cartridge for $3 total. In this market, it's all you're going to get. And then he takes the cartridges, just slaps the label on them. $7. $8. Ching! Is that how Ryan Cohen became a millionaire and the CEO of GameStop? How does it work? Here we have the picture of Roaring Kitty, who started his stream with humor, starting his stream with a broken arm and band-aids. And in fact, he was faking being dead, and he faked being resurrected at the beginning of the stream. He came back to life. We were hearing the little beep, beep, beep of his heart, and suddenly he woke up as he got reactivated. That was a nonsense stream all over. Mario Nafal commenting on it. None of this is advice. I have an aggressive style, blah, blah, blah. You know that stuff. But when you're dealing with these types of opportunities, you could lose it all. You could lose everything. They're highly speculative in nature. You should know that these are very risky opportunities. And they are risky because there could be tremendous upside if it works out. So yes, it was a stream filled with warnings, and there was even a written warning at the beginning saying, I don't give counsels. I don't give counsels either. All right, Chelsea Handler on 50 Cent, saying that she had to remind 50 Cent that he is black and therefore he cannot vote for Trump.
You heard about my ex-boyfriend, right, 50 Cent, and his support of Donald Trump.
Yeah, what's going on between you? I saw your tweets and I go, wait, what's happening? Because you said he was your favorite ex-boyfriend, and then what is he doing? He's supporting Trump?
He says he doesn't want to pay 62% in taxes, which, by the way, isn't a plan of Joe Biden's. That's a lie. So he doesn't want to pay 62% of taxes because he doesn't want to go from being 50 Cent to 20 Cent. And I had to remind him that he was a black person, so he can't vote for Donald Trump, and that he shouldn't be influencing an entire swath of people who may listen to him because he's worried about his own personal pocketbook. So
this is, you know, I hesitate to say it because I think it's an overly used concept, but it's freaking racist. And it shows just this kind of slave approach to the black population, like they're ours. They have to vote with us. We are on the side of Joe Biden. That's how a Jewish liberal thinks, basically. They think that they are bound in a in a kind of alliance with the black population. There is no such thing as an alliance with the black population. They will continue voting in their interest, and sometimes it might align with yours, sometimes it might not. There is a bunch of working people in the black population that thrived much more under the Trump economy than they thrive in the Biden economy, because they see their purchasing power being diluted. And if you're like this black person who was just working at UPS, you had massive job opportunities and good overtime pay under Trump, and then under Biden, the world gets fucked up and your friends on social welfare are outperforming you suddenly. So, but it's such a demonstration of the condescendence with which these liberals are looking at black populations. And in a way, that condescendence is deserved. Like, to the black people, I would say, prove them wrong at least once. Vote Republican at least once. Show Chelsea Handler that she is absolutely wrong. But Chelsea Handler is kind of right. Black people haven't been able to channel their political power toward anything else than the Democrats. You're going to just get the crumbs of the table if you always vote for the same party. You have to be able to switch. You have to be able to say, what you're offering us is not good enough. Let's switch to the others. As long as you don't do this, you're always going to get the crumbs that the Democrats want to leave to you. Rodi Lacid says, nothing is stopping her from paying more taxes if she wants to under Trump. Just don't write anything off. Yeah, that's the ultimate argument for those Democrats. Of course, the argument for taxes of Democrats is either theft or it's misplaced voluntary donation. In the sense that if you're arguing for taxes, you're certainly not arguing for taxes being taken from your own wallet, because that you could do. You can do a donation to the US government. They will cash in your check. Just write a $1 million check to the IRS. They're going to cash it in. certainly, when you argue for taxes, what you mean is, I'm already paying enough taxes. I want to collect more taxes from other humans around me. Therefore, the argument for taxes is always an argument for theft, because nothing keeps you from donating your own money. Jake Shields says, it's impressive how they make up a lie, and even after it has proven a lie, they just keep repeating it. You have Gerard Fidity here saying, Hamas terrorists burn Jewish babies to death in ovens. But the UN blacklist Israel for harming children. Even for the UN, this is psychotic. Whatever legitimacy this institution once had, it's gone now. Massive move by the UN. I mean, I don't even know to what extent is this valid, but today I've seen it and I've confirmed it to the best of my abilities. The UN, the United Nations, has added Israel to their list of terrorist organizations that kill babies. I mean, yeah, the news has been reported that way. Israel slams UN over shameful inclusion on blacklist of entities arming children in conflict zones. And when you look at the list of this thing, it's all terrorist groups. It's all like, really, the enemies of civilization. Now you have Israel on the list. I love these. I love that these global organizations somehow are detaching themselves from Jewish power. Now, I don't want to celebrate too early here. Jewish power is extremely extensive, and I tend to believe that these institutions are completely captured by Jewish power. So I don't know what the fuck happened that leads the UN to do this today. I don't know how it happens that the International Criminal Court of Justice finds Israel guilty of genocide, but it's happening. It's happening. The meme, you know, it's happening. So let's celebrate that it's happening, and let's realize that perhaps there is more freedom in these circles of international justice, whatever, and UN organizations than I initially thought. Real Base Talk says, I heard a story today about Jared Kushner's grandmother having to dig a 1,000-foot tunnel with a spoon to escape a concentration camp. Oh, they always have the most terrible stories. It's always, like, weirdly detailed. It's weird. It's really weird, this cult of persecution. Because there is something that leads to persecutory discourse, and it's schizophrenia. And if your entire group is telling me, you know, we have these extensive stories of persecutions, we channel them into our families down the line 4 or 5 generations so that our great-grandchildren are now telling these stories, I would say, well, at this point, it's not an efficient way to know the truth. At this point, you don't have a method to determine if this happened to your grandma or if your grandma was schizophrenic. Sorry. You know, bring me historical analysis, bring me picture evidence, bring me whatever you like, even written evidence by your grandma. I will look at it and I'll see if it makes sense. But the story of your grandma that she told your mom, and then your mom told you this, I don't know. Rodila Sid says, Mark D, at this point, I'm almost rooting for the Antichrist to just come and burn it all. No, but going back to the argument of this guy, Hamas terrorists burn Jewish babies to death in ovens, but the UN blacklists Israel for harming children. There's a big moral error here, which is, it really doesn't matter what Hamas did. They could have burned your entire population in ovens. You still wouldn't be justified to be bombing babies. This is the basic decency that we're trying to get the Jews to accept, and holy shit, is it hard. We're just asking for basic decency here. If Hamas hurt you, go at them and go strong, but we won't accept that you are indiscriminately bombing civilian populations. There are modern methods of war, and you are so well qualified to use them because you basically own America. You own the top of the military intelligence in the world. You can literally have the American military point to you distant as a Hamas terrorist in it, distant as a bunch of babies in it. So why don't you use it? Do like Zelensky. But no, they don't want to use it because they want to commit a genocide. They want to commit a genocide in 2024 with cell phones. And it's like, no, bro, this is not the right time. 1940, maybe. 1960, maybe. You're not going to commit a genocide in 2024 and not have people say, hey, guys, you're committing a genocide. The very least that you're going to have to tolerate is that people will state the truth about what you did, and people will forever remember the actions of Israel here. You know, there will be Muslims, you know, and if some population is capable of understanding this, it should be the Jews. There will be Muslim populations in 5 generations from now who will have told their stories of oppression at the hands of the Jewish regime of Israel to their children, and grandchildren. and they will have a legitimate intergenerational claim of victimization by you. 4 or 5 generations down the line, they will remember that this little triangle that you fought for, northeast of Egypt, that this little place that you insisted at putting yourself at the middle of all civilization, that you fought for it with a genocide, with an ethnic cleansing. And this is where, again, I feel almost uncomfortable because every day I say it, but holy shit, do I agree with Nick Fuentes. He's right on the target here.
I just can't imagine being a white person, especially, but really any American or any Christian in particular, and not talking about this. Like, our country is owned. It's embarrassing. It's humiliating. It's disgraceful. This is a great country. This is our country. It's a Christian country, and it's owned. It is owned. It is raped. It is enslaved by a Jewish mafia. Some of the sickest, most vile people. They hate our God. They hate our traditions. They hate our race. They never miss an opportunity to remind us of this. When Spain, Ireland, and Norway recognized Palestine, you had so-called Western Jews fantasizing about Irish politicians and their kids being raped and killed because Ireland dared to step out of line. And they said about
Spain... See, that's what it is. They go there as soon as there's some opposition. Any sort of opposition, even just saying, hey, there are human beings in Palestine. Hey, don't bomb babies. They already are wishing the rape of your children and some intergenerational sorcery over you. It's like, bro, relax. I thought that genocide was bad. I thought we weren't reverting to some kind of, you know, club on your cranium. Chimpanzee mentality of Middle Eastern tradition. I thought that civilization was growing further than this and away from this. And now you're telling me that suddenly all of this is valid and, oh, well, it's okay because the other side is terrorist. It's getting old. And just like the GameStop meme cannot work twice, I'm afraid that the terrorist meme cannot work 7 times. And at this point, they've been pulling it 6 times. Like when you start counting the 9/11, the bombings of Syria, the invasion of Iraq, the invasion of Afghanistan, the invasion of Libya, terrorism. It's run its course. You've used that meme before. And we can see what's happening in Palestine is certainly not the killing of just terrorists. We can certainly see that you're killing other people than terrorists. Ty Odyssey says, Jeff, my cousin's young wife was just diagnosed with schizophrenia last week. Is it still worth it for them to try for kids, or what's the best case scenario? So she's his wife. She is young. She must be put into pregnancy as soon as possible. Pregnancy has a very regulating effect on psychosis. And no, it's incorrect that a schizophrenic woman cannot have babies. In fact, a schizophrenic woman will turn to her best under pregnancy and young child care. Now, it means a lot of trouble for your cousin because, yes, she's going to be insane. Yes, she's going to be accusing him of coming from a parallel universe to fuck with her friends or whatever. Yes, she's going to hallucinate that when he sleeps, he's going to betray her with other females into a parallel universe. Yes, she's going to see ghosts. Yes, she's going to hit him and yell at him because whatever hallucination she has in her mind. But she is still a valid, productive vagina that he can use. And in fact, if she turns around and concentrates our, if he finds a way to make it the center of her life, to care for those babies as best as she can, and if he's just there to provide the extra care when she fails, when she goes into a psychosis, when she can't do it, it's possible and it's desirable. She's going to be more troubled for society if she is free and not having responsibilities. So my position on this, well, it's always my position on everything. Inseminate now. Shamrock Shake says very low sugar diets are reported to improve schizophrenic brains. Not an absolute, but worth a try. I don't know about the studies of this, but personal experience with it, yes, generally, the more sick a woman is, the least energy she has, it will improve her behavior simply because, you know, if you're tired, you can't do crazy stuff. Like, you can't start hitting on the walls or tearing down the house when you have no calories. It's so sad. We have to keep our females on low-calorie diets because they're fucking insane in the head. Well, you know, you have to deal with the hands you're dealt with, and your cousin was dealt the worst of hands. If you are a white male, you don't deserve to live. That was a statement by Noel Ignatiev that was shared on the regular chat. Well, yeah, we've been analyzing this anti-white hatred on the show before. I don't think it's worth going back to it here. there's big developments in the Trump trial. A message was found on Facebook where the guy was saying, my cousin is a juror and says Trump is getting convicted. Thank you, folks, for all your hard work. And so there's currently an investigation on who was this from. And some attorneys are apparently arguing that it was not a post of someone who actually was a cousin of a juror in the Trump trial. He was a juror in some other unrelated matter. And I'm not sure what's stated here. But there is basically arguments around, was this guy truly reporting information from within the jury that basically they had decided Trump was guilty before it even went through? If the investigation revealed this guy to have some connection to truly be a cousin of a juror, it could be a ground for mistrial. So we'll follow this, but for now, I think it's not demonstrated for sure, because you can have fakers who are making this claim on Facebook, but it's not real. So who knows? Was it real? Was it not real? There needs to be an investigation for us to know. CNN reports that the CIA assessment is that Benjamin Netanyahu likely judges he can get away without defining a post-war plan. So here's shameless behavior on the Israeli side. And even the CIA knows it and reports it that way. Even the CIA is like, you know, this guy probably thinks he can do anything with us. And, you know, the CIA is right for once. What is happening at the CIA? They're now finding the truth, making actual analysis of actual geopolitics. This is where I'm like, holy shit, guys. The cultural victory is in the bag, in the pocket. I mean, you have CIA analysts speaking like me at this point. Are they watching my show? The CIA analysts are properly perceiving that there is some shamefulness about Jewish leadership in Israel right now. And that, you know, they probably think they can just bomb the carpet bomb the whole place and never have any sort of peace plan ever. So basically an ethnic cleansing. It's time we wake up to this reality. And in this election year, unfortunately, we have no choice that is truly stopping this. We have no presidential candidate that's saying, hey, we're going to stop this. We're going to stop the shamefulness. We're going to put checks and whatever. You know, they could promise something that I don't even believe in. Trump could just throw a promise out there and I would be rooting for him. But we don't even have this. Trump is saying, let's be more aggressive on the bombing. Let's finish it quicker. It's not good PR. Not good PR. Ty Odyssey says, well, Ryan Cohen is announcing a plan to bring peace to the Middle East. Yeah, what about Ryan Cohen's plan? Ryan has demonstrated a great track record of success in his doings at GameStop and other places. Why don't we hand the situation of the Middle East to Ryan Cohen and then throw money at him and see if he can make something out of it? I mean, I trust Ryan Cohen personally. I mean, that was literally the argument of Roaring Kitty. I do not want to save to OneDrive. I want to save to the documents folder on my computer that I have in my house. I love this guy. What a dirty move by Windows. It happened something like 4 or 5 years ago, but Windows started installing itself not in /users/desktop. That would already be insulting because I want a folder just called desktop. I don't want a subfolder of users. But eventually they took it one step further and it's in /users/desktop/OneDrive. And in fact, they did /OneDrive/desktop. And it's like, yeah, why don't you subscribe to OneDrive? What? Yeah, OneDrive will keep copies of all your files at the Microsoft data center. Did you set up your OneDrive yet? And they started being super harassing, and I've been Ctrl-Alt-deleting the executable and uninstalling any trace of it. But the OneDrive virus kept being aggressive. And eventually I realized, holy shit, they have redone the tree structure of the directory such that even when you uninstall OneDrive, your files are still stuck in /user/OneDrive/desktop. No one ever asked for this. You tried imposing your cloud revolution onto the people without their consent. You tried becoming basically an asset of surveillance through your operating system against the interest of the people. Fuck you, Microsoft. I hate you. I hate you. The future of politics, says Richard Spencer. The AfD campaign in Germany. So they suggest that we can collect the tears of the leftist and bathe in them. And there's an LGBT activism flag right below, behind the guy who's crying. We can collect all those tears, recycle them for showers and save electricity. Rudy Lacid says, JF, did you see Adobe change their TOS and all your Photoshop files you keep in the cloud? They can now look through them, use them for their own use, use them for AI, etc. Yes, I saw the change of the license, and I saw a lot of people who are saying, I'm not going to use Adobe anymore. I've not been using Adobe for years, as a young filmmaker, JF, you know, learning about video editing. I had Adobe Premiere Pro and other software before, but the fact is there is development in open source. There are some very good programs available now that are good replacements for all of them. One of them being Paint.net. Paint.net, respect to Paint.net. I find it actually more usable and more extensible than Adobe Photoshop. Name me one thing you can do with Adobe Photoshop that I cannot do on Paint.net. With all of my plugins, all of my extras, I can do anything. Just to say, Adobe was already flailing and, you know, they still have this these gay programmers who are still somehow paying for Adobe Photoshop. Where the fuck does this money come? They must be sucking dicks for it. I don't know how it works. But somehow people buy these $1,000 software still. And then they turned into subscription service. Yes. End of the line, Joel. They turned into subscription service. And the gay designer space totally is like, oh yeah, exploit us. Yeah, we want to pay on a monthly basis. And eventually, you know, in my contractual work, sometimes I have to ask works to a designer and I'm like, okay, deliver your work. And they would deliver it in Adobe Cloud format. And I wanted to vomit. I wanted to vomit to see the dependence of these little creatures. All dependent on a subscription system. You got enslaved, bro. You got enslaved by the system. And I was like, can you get it out of there? It's like, no, JF. Here's a login special key. You have to become a member of Adobe, and then you're gonna see my Adobe project. No. Okay, can you export it? Can you give me something that I can have on my physical desktop computer? And yeah, so Adobe basically installed itself into society progressively from a software that you owned to a software that you pirated to a cloud system of constant dependence and monthly payments. Like, you can't, I don't know how they're doing, these designers, because you can't know for sure that you're going to have a contract work this month, or maybe you're going to be free all month. And yet you're paying that subscription service at Adobe? What the fuck are you doing, bro? Anyways, what was I saying? I wanted to answer. Yes, I saw the license change, and and it's absolutely ridiculous. It's like, not only are you draining subscription payment from these creators, now at this point you're saying, also, we own your art, and we'll have our AIs just look into it and learn from it. And we could eventually sell it. We could eventually sell derivatives of your art. Basically, What the Adobe license change means is they have changed from a model where they are a tool for the designer. They have now turned their designers into tools. And what you're doing is you're collaborating with the revolutionary phenotype. I'm sorry. Like, it's literally what's happening. I wish it was easier than this. I wish I could sugarcoat it because I don't like looking like a tinfoil conspiracist, okay? But you are being, you're being pawned, you're being creamed, you're being transformed into a teacher for an AI. And in 5 years from now, there will be no one needing your services because you're going to have taught it all to Adobe. Vroom. The Eye of Sauron that will now look over all the designers and what they do. And once it had five or six looks at whatever it is that you're doing, it's going to be able to pirate you in a way that you'll never know about it. And now Adobe will start selling these services with subscription to your employers by saying, hey, we now have an AI that can do exactly what these designers are doing. In fact, we learned from them. We learned from them with the Eye of Sauron, and at this point, we don't need them anymore. So all of this to say, it's, and this is where I was so depressed starting the show, because the GameStop stuff, the Adobe stuff, all of this is a falling fucking civilization. It's a civilization where people are collaborating to their own burying. They're collaborating to the elevation of the revolutionary phenotype. They are kind of grabbing the last pieces of money they can as they get swallowed into the big AI vogue, the big AI hole. And there's no movement of resistance. Much love, everyone. Tomorrow I'll be on a break. I'll see you all Sunday.